There's a little bit less of me than there was the last time you saw me. I've had a knee replacement, and therefore I'm still walking rather gingerly because, among other things, I'm wearing these new progressive lenses, which means if you have the same color carpet on the steps, I can't see them. So I'm not going to fall apart. Our readings are somewhat challenging for this particular weekend. Started out rather calmly, and I got calls from a number of former students of mine and other people just to see what was going on around my house. And, of course, before the day was over, three people had been killed. We have to reflect on this, and I think our readings sort of fit in with this. First of all, you have the first reading from 1 Kings, where Elijah has just been defeated, or chased away, really, by non-friendly people. Sounds familiar. So he's taken up refuge in this cave, but then a voice says, well, go look for the Lord, basically. And he looks for the Lord, and of course, it's not where he expects to find him. It's not in the wind, it's not in the fire, it's not in the earthquake. Most of us are looking for the sensational, and he finds the Lord, a title that is probably unique to the Old Testament in this sense, the Lord in a whisper. We're not willing to listen. We want a lot of noise around us. Our second reading, Paul's reminding his listeners that though he is a Jew, though he was a rabbi, though he was a Pharisee, no less, nevertheless, the Jews still are the heirs to the covenant. We can forget that. The covenant was made permanently with them, and it still remains. So therefore, I've just been revising part of this chapter of a book I'm writing when they get the first news about the beginning of the Holocaust in 1942. It wasn't definitive, because even when the occupation forces entered into Germany in 1945, they were shocked to learn about the camps. Famous picture, Yad Vashem, of Eisenhower and his staff just in utter dismay. They weren't expecting it, even though there had been news 3 years before. And one of the things is we have to recognize that the Jews still have this privileged place. We're the heirs of the new covenant. Then you have Matthew's gospel. Matthew depends on Mark. But he changes the story a bit, because here you have Jesus finally urging Peter to get out and walk. And Peter, like the rest of us, his faith fails. What I like about Peter, he is every man. And he always, never gets it quite right. You've heard me say this before. The words inscribed around the main dome of St. Peter's Basilica over the main altar are taken from Luke's gospel. Jesus has just said he would never deny Jesus. Peter has just said he would never deny Jesus. He said, before the cock has crowed three times, you will have denied me. But I pray that when you have turned, there's a play on the words in both Latin and Greek, it doesn't work in English. I pray that when you have been converted, you will in turn, convertere means to turn, you will in turn turn and strengthen your brothers. It's upon Peter's failure and his admission of it that therefore is the strength of the church. So today's gospel, we have that Peter begins to fade again, begins to doubt, and then suddenly Jesus rescues him. Why did you doubt? Did you not know that I am here? He is the only one who can save us, not boisterous people like me, not people who believe in the cult of personality, not people who promise all these things immediate, but rather Jesus himself, who, like the Lord, comes in a whisper. So how do we unpack this a bit? Well, first of all, we have to ask, where is God? And secondly, who belongs? We're very good at judging who should be here and who shouldn't be. People keep asking me, what do you think of the Pope? And I have to always say, well, I'm a historian. Popes have to be dead for 25 years before they can be evaluated. But one of the things is, this guy is upsetting people. He's upsetting people by making them look at the reality. And people think he's changed. He hasn't changed one thing, but rather he's been pastoral about it. And it wouldn't hurt us maybe to be the same way. So who belongs? And finally, we have to ask, where are we willing to listen and hear in the whisper, the quietness? So first of all, where is God? Well, we know from first reading, he's not in the fire. He's not in the wind. He's rather very quiet. So therefore, if we want to find God, we have to enter into a type of silence ourselves so that we can listen and hear him in the whisper, hear him in the light breeze, not just the mighty winds. And one of the things is we have to rely on Christ. We keep relying on the successful preacher. We like the flowery stuff. And yet, Paul, by the way, had a severe speech impediment. He was a lousy speaker, and yet he's the one who really formed the church for the Gentiles, reaching beyond his Jewish tradition and reaching out to the Gentiles. Where the other apostles, the 12, the chosen ones, they're the ones who sort of weren't restricted just to themselves. And Paul is the experimenter. He goes out. He was willing to look for God, not where you might expect to find him, but where he was whispering. The second point, who belongs? Well, for Paul, he reminds his listeners that the Jewish people still are under the covenant, present tense. And that covenant continues to exist. And then we all have to be open to this. And that's one of the problems in our church, in our country, in our city. We witnessed it yesterday. Hatred replaces the quiet whisper. And one of the things that's very frightening is many, many, too many Catholics have fallen into this trap of thinking America is an elect nation. That is a Protestant term. It applies to New England, which was a religious term originally. It was England was the new chosen people. And out of this came New England, a city on a hilltop. We are a blessed nation, but we're not an elect nation. And one of the things we have to be careful of, I think, is that we too many times identify who we are with where we are. And remember, the church is broader than the national borders. A number of years ago, I was in London doing some research, and it was just during the Watergate hearings. And President Nixon's lawyer had referred to Senator Inouye as a little Jap. So these friends of mine, these other Jesuits from the British Isles, they sort of picked up on this because when the lawyer was challenged, he said, well, after all, I'm a little American, aren't I? And the others there, they all said, what is an American? It's very interesting listening to this in a foreign country. What is an American? Remember the Senator Inouye, whether you liked him or not, was a member of the 144th Battalion, which was all Japanese Americans. They were not allowed to serve in the East. They could only serve in Europe. It was the most decorated unit in the war. That's where he lost his arm. So therefore, when the lawyer said, well, after all, I'm a little American. So my friend said, what is an American? He said, you name it. We're a mixture of everything, and that's what we tend to forget. We also tend to forget, and I've had people challenge me, that there was never any anti-Catholicism in this country. Yes, there was. And the Klan that was founded in the 1960s, it was open to Catholics. They even were putting things in people's bumpers down in Petersburg, Virginia, when I happened to be there, and inviting them to join the Klan. The second Klan, founded in 1915, was the one that was both anti-black and anti-Jew and anti-Catholic. Some ways we did better when there was more anti-Catholicism that was more blatant. In fact, we seemed to thrive during that period. And it was widespread. One of the first questions I was asked, because I was a Jesuit but not yet ordained when I started my PhD, and we were wearing the Roman collar, and I walked in to meet my advisor the second or third day I was at Yale. And he, at the end of my little interview, he turned to me and said, you will learn I'm an honest man, but you do not belong in this university. I advise you to leave. He was a descendant of the first rector of Yale College. Bigotry was his middle name. And I stayed. Then he was convinced that I was sent there by the Jesuits to learn Yale's techniques to turn them against Yale. The man was at least consistent. One of the things was, in some ways it challenged me because then I had to prove I belonged. And I think a lot of us have sat back too easily, maybe not taken it seriously enough, taken our faith seriously. And we can see ourselves as an elect nation rather than a blessed nation. If we're blessed, we have obligations to reach out. If we in our lives have been blessed, we have an obligation to reach out. Being a Catholic is a 24, 25-hour-a-day job. And it goes for 9 days a week. And one of the things that we can forget about, we can relax. We want to cling to the familiar so many times. The church in the United States has never been more divided than it is now. And a lot of this is all ideology, because this is the way things should be. Just ask me, I know. And therefore, when a slightly different twist is put on things, people decide they don't like it. We have to go back to the good old days. Finally, how do we do this? Well, we have to listen. We have to listen to the sound of Jesus' voice. He alone can save us. Ultimately, that was the story of today's gospel, because Peter finally does trust in him, and Jesus challenges him, "Why is it that you didn't trust before?" And then the rest of the disciples all claim, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Remember the title Christ, it was a point, was the name given to any king in the line of David. It just simply means the anointed one. So at the anointing of the new king, he became the Christos. So it's not just necessarily a term of divinity. We use it that way. Too many times we use it as a family name. That is, we think it's Jesus Christ, the last name. I actually had a professor in the law school think that was the case. So one of the things is that we now have to sort of look around. Are we judging who or should not be in the United States? Who or should not be in this community? Who should or should not be in the church? Or can we recognize the variety of talents and ourselves listen to be converted so that we can say, truly, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God.